Welcome to Created, a Blueprint podcast.
I want to be creative on my own terms.
DIY isn't a hobby, it's a lifestyle.
This is what I want to do.
How do you stay inspired to create?
We sit down with designers, creators, doers, and makers who made it.
Did you want to have a career that was creative? When did you make this a business?
It's just what I've always loved to do. I don't know why.
We find out what sparked their passion and how they turned a hobby into a full-blown creative career.
I was this 22-year-old kid who just got a job at a comic book school.
Keep being willing to expand yourself.
You can do whatever you want, especially as a creative where the industry is always changing.
I love hearing people's stories.
Let's do it.
In this episode, Paul Costabile talks with cookbook author Katie Workman.
Katie Workman, hi.
Hello.
It's great to have you here and hang out with you today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Sorry, I already cut you off. Look at me.
I'm
so excited to learn more about you. I just want to real quick talk, a little bit about what you've done. Right now, co-host of Real Life Cooking along with Robin Miller on Blueprint.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The author of several cookbooks. You're a cook, a writer, a mother of two, an activist in hunger issues, and an enthusiastic advocate for family meals, which is the inspiration behind your two beloved cookbooks, Dinner Solved and the Mom 100 Cookbook, right?
All of those things are right.
Awesome.
Yes.
You do so much in the cooking world. You also contribute and write for so many different cooking publications and also just news. I was impressed by all the people you write for. Like, I think it's everyone who's ever done an article you've written for in the cooking world, right?
I don't know about that, but a lot of people.
Foodnetwork.com and Food and Wine Magazine, The Wall Street Journal. I mean, there's an amazing, impressive list of all these things you've done. I want to talk about you now, but I want to go backwards because cooking is, essential to every home. It's a really important thing for everybody growing up. And depending how you grow up, right, it's always different. But there's in my mind, there's two types of, you have a cook at home who does great meals for the family, and then that's what they do, and that's the food of the family. And then there's something about someone who takes that and becomes a professional, and that's a shift, right?
From
so tell me how you grew up with food. Let's start with that. What was food like for you as a kid?
It was definitely an important part of our world growing up. My mom was a very good cook. She was an intuitive cook. She was a good cook and she cooked to entertain, like her big dishes, her entertaining dishes were paella and on rare occasion a cassoulet, which would take her 3 days and she would, swear her way through the entire thing.
Oh, yeah,
but,
nice.
At the end there would be a cassoulet. And, my parents entertained. My father was a book publisher and published a whole bunch of cookbooks, including the Silver Palette Cookbook, which is how I taught myself how to cook because my mom wasn't all that much of the teacher in the kitchen. But we did cook together. But I read cookbooks constantly as a child. I just read them cover to cover and I taught myself how to cook from a bunch of them and had my little classic childhood favorites. I hope this is okay what I'm doing.
You're fine.
I just can't really see you.
That's okay.
So was that
something in the family though? Because your dad because it's kind of interesting. Your dad wrote cookbooks.
He didn't write them. He published them.
Oh, sorry.
Them.
He was a book publisher.
Yeah.
So was that something because it's dad's work, you're just involved with it or it's
no,
around the house?
No, I taught myself how to cook and I cooked all the time and I loved cooking. And then later it's easy to connect the dots in hindsight, but I asked for a typewriter for my 10th birthday. I asked for a pasta maker for my 12th birthday. How did this all, so I just was always mucking around the kitchen and I also have very severe food allergies. So that obviously played into it. And I don't really always know exactly how it played into it. I mean, part of it was that if I wanted to try something like falafel, which, has a lot of sort of mysterious ingredients in it and things that potentially spices that I could be allergic to, I made falafel by myself to see what it was like. So that's one of the more obvious ways it played into it. And I guess it was also in a weird way, again, I don't think I was thinking this when I was 11 years old, but sort of maybe it was a way to sort of try to reclaim food and not have it be this the enemy,
sure,
this dangerous thing, but have it be something that, I was just sort of endlessly curious about it. And I also was always really happy cooking for other people. Mm-hmm. And So that was the genesis, really, growing up. And my father was a huge appreciator of good food, and my parents entertained a lot, and yeah, so that was it. But, you know, I started with the basic stuff, like Bisquick coffee cakes, yeah, Toll House cookies, sure. You know.
Was there ever anything else you wanted to do or be before you took a liking to cooking? Was there some other dream job early on?
Oh, yes. I was going to be a ballerina, but that didn't pan out.
No one's saying you can't dance while you cook.
Yeah.
Hello, it's never too late.
No, it's interesting. The offers have really slowed down on the ballerina front. It's a sad thing, but...
Okay, so ballerina first.
Yes, yes. Then... Oh, definitely. Ballerina for a little while. I don't know what else. I think I wanted to be a pilot, but then... Then I think the Amelia Earhart thing kind of scared me. I don't really remember.
You're like, I don't know if it'll work
but
out.
But I didn't actively say I want to be a cook. I wasn't like thinking that quite at that time. Mm-hmm. But then I did start to think it later. But then I went to traditional college, majored in English, and then I graduated and thought about going to culinary school, but was dissuaded by my parents, who I think were like, we just paid for 4 years of college education for you. Perhaps we don't want to go pay for you to learn how to chop onions when you can do that in your own time.
Right.
And as mentioned, my father was a book publisher and really wanted me to go into the business. And I did. I went into book publishing, and I was an editor. I became a cookbook editor for obvious reasons. And I did that for 12 and a half years. And then my dad urged me once again to come over to his company, which I did. And I was there for 4 years. And then I said, I am not doing what I want to do.
Wow.
And I quit.
Oh, wow.
So.
Let's talk about that for a second. That must have been a really tough decision. It's family business.
Yep.
You didn't love what you were doing. I think so many of the people we've talked to today, including you, there's this shift moment where like you either can... do something that you really aren't happy with forever.
Yep.
You could take a bold risk and say, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do something else.
Yeah.
How did you pull it off?
And it was really, you know, it was sort of like, God, I wanted to do something with cooking and writing my whole life. Like, this isn't a whim. This isn't like a, like, today I feel like, you know, I want to be an astronaut. You know, it's like, you know, I'm 40 and this is what I'm still thinking. So perhaps I should do it or try to do it. But as a sidebar, what's so amazing about all the people here, like all the Blueprint experts, is that they are people who actually sort of said like, oh my God, I love doing X, right? Knitting, crocheting, letter art, and they figured out how to actually make it their career. And it's a really amazing thing because you know that there's a lot of people in the world who are thinking to themselves like, oh man, I wish I could decorate cakes all day long, right? And then, but these people had like the skill and the perseverance and the like just determination to make it happen for them. I don't know. I find that I've been finding that very inspirational all around.
You're similar.
Yes, I suppose I am, which was not my way of like,
I'm making sure. I thought maybe you don't recognize that.
No. I guess I do, but it wasn't a roundabout way of saying how I don't know, but I just like, but I'm looking at all these people who just like just made these essentially like what could have stayed as hobbies into professions, right? Like it clicked over it's not untrue of what I did as well, but
Did that happen? What did you, when you made that shift out of your, the publishing company, did you have to like, was it a little more pressure about earning a living more than a hobby that you're passionate about?
It was a very much a combination of everything. I needed to figure out how to turn this, like, I want to write and cook into a living. It wasn't like, now I'll go just do that. And if it takes me somewhere, it will. If it doesn't, it won't. And I quit without knowing what I was going to do, which was really scary. It was really scary because I was disappointing my father considerably, although he did understand.
Mm-hmm.
And later you'll find out more about that.
Ooh, I like
back
that.
To you after these messages.
After the break.
So it was scary on a lot of levels, right? I was leaving the family business, I was disappointing my dad, and I had no idea what I was gonna do.
What the heck?
I says to myself.
Well, I said, please, sir, I want some more. I was just gonna do live theater for a second,
excuse me. Exactly. So let's see. So then I got asked to join a brand new startup website, which was called Cookster, which if you look up Cookster, that is not what our original Cookster was. It has now morphed into like a pretty awful spammy site. But the goal of Cookster was to be a website that featured recipes from cookbooks, old and new, all across.
Curating.
And I was the editor-in-chief of that.
Wow.
Which was great. And the thing that was great about it was, I mean, it was really hard. It was a startup. We didn't pay ourselves, or at least I didn't get paid. I'm not sure what happened with everyone else. But I started the weekly newsletter. So I started writing on a consistent basis. And I was contributing a little bit to other sites like AOL at that point. But I started writing this newsletter. And then here's where the plot twist comes in. And I was cooking, of course, all the time. The longtime cookbook editor at my father's company, which is called Workman Publishing, the longtime cookbook editor there called me up, who I've known forever. I don't remember meeting her because I met her when I was that young of a child. Mm-hmm. And she called me up. She took me out to lunch and she said, like, your writing's really good. I think you should write a cookbook. And I said, wow. Really? You know, she said, yeah. Like, you know, do you have any ideas? I said, you know, it's funny. Last week I thought to myself, somebody should write a cookbook called the Mom 100 Cookbook. 100 recipes every mom needs in her back pocket. You know, deal with all the ongoing things. I have two kids at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got this package of chicken breasts. What am I going to do with it? I can't make the same recipe again. Or like your kid comes home and says, there's a big sale tomorrow. And you're like, oh God, like just give me a brownie recipe. And so she said, I love it. Write a proposal for it. And I did. And that's how it started. And it was sort of the opposite of nepotism because my father didn't really understand the premise. He didn't really like, it didn't click for him. He didn't get it. And this editor was like, I think that you're missing it, and acquire the book. And I wrote the book, and the book was published, and it was a really big success. And he really got it. He saw it and he understood it, and it was selling really well. And then he got glioblastoma and died 6 months later.
Oh my gosh! So, wow.
So that's the other plot twist.
Oh wow! Yeah. Okay. But he was able to see.
But he was able to see it,
and it's actually as a writer.
It's nice that, and then things sort of went from there. And I started the blog at the exact same moment, right before the cookbook came out, because it was sort of, you're aware that you should have an online presence of some sort, and writing for me is what I love to do, writing and cooking. So,
well, I kind of love, you know, you didn't like the publishing job, but I feel like editing there must have helped you as a writer.
Absolutely, 100%. And as a recipe writer, like amazingly, I write like nice, clean, understandable recipes.
And growing up in that world, it shaped you as a writer too. So it's funny, I like, you know, in thinking about people who are young or just trying to get into things like you're doing. Like, you may be working a job you hate, or you may be doing stuff you don't love, but it all kind of becomes relative
to
what you do, right?
It is. It's like you can look back and like connect the dots backwards, and I think it's pretty rare for you to do something and not have it have merit for you in some way, shape, or form at some point in your life. And you very likely won't know what you're paying forward at the time, you know, what you're learning that will be so useful to you, or who you're meeting, or what your or a different way of looking at something, you know, like there's so many elements about it. And it's like, and I think that's actually the sort of one of the nice parts of life is to be able to be like,
That happened.
Yeah.
But you have to have an openness to it, which like you could have worked the publishing job and not have learned as much as you did, been closed off to things because you didn't want to do them. So I think it's important that, you know, people remember, like, there's an openness. Yeah. Like, I don't really love this, but there's got to be a bigger purpose to this now or whatever it is.
I think that that's 100% true. And I also, but I do think, again, going back to sort of this group of people here, I think that the likelihood of you being a successful person in a creative field or especially like a creative arts field, and not being an open person and not being also somewhat of an enthusiast and a, like, sort of student, you know, in a way, like a learner, I think that is pretty, like the odds of that are pretty slim.
Right.
It wouldn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, you have to always be humble too and be learning.
Yeah.
And open to growing. And,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And putting yourself in like different situations, you know, just like, you know, traveling and going to a different restaurant, like, you know, just making sure that like new things are coming into your life all the time. And, you know, again, it's a thing like probably, I'm sure, you have this experience where you set up a business trip or whatever it is, and you're like, it's a month or two in advance, and then it comes up, oh, I can't take the time, I'm so busy, I don't know why I said yes to this conference or whatever it is. And then you go, and something great happens.
Right.
Something great and you don't know what it's going to be. And again, you might not even know at the time, but a year later, I just met somebody here, another food person, who said, I met you at your pub party that a mutual friend of ours had for you in San Francisco 6 years ago.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And I didn't remember, but she remembered, and now we're
That's how life is. Yeah. It comes back around in weird ways, right?
And she's giving me a grill.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember.
I mean, like, you know.
So you guys know, cool. someone announced in one of our meetings here that they could get grills, and you yelled, I want a grill.
Well, actually, right? Pretty much. That's pretty much what. All right, fine. That's what happened.
By the way, when I got info on everybody, Erica, our talent producer, I don't know how to say it on the podcast, Erica, our awesome Erica, she does everything around here. When she sent me the info, she said, Spitfire personality next to your name. I was like, oh, yes.
You're listening to Created, a Blueprint podcast. Inspired? Fuel your own creativity at myblueprint.com, a home for makers, crafters, artists, and anyone who lives for the joy of creating by hand. You'll find projects, classes, shows, and more to help you get and stay in your peak creative zone. From crochet to cake decorating and everything in between, it's all at myblueprint.com.
Have you always been, because you're so fun, and that's, like you said, you have to be an enthusiast in this world to be a successful creator. Have you always been that? Like in your family, in your upbringing, you've always been like the enthusiastic person?
My husband calls me the gerbil, which is really adorable, right?
I mean, it's not like, a hair
basically,
thing, right?
No, I'm just kidding. No, I don't know. Maybe it is.
I'm kidding.
No, it's just sort of like that, like gerbily energy, I guess. I don't know. And I mean, like I drink almost no caffeine because why would you pour gasoline on that? You know, like so. Yeah, a little bit.
It's cool. I mean, I think you're uniquely you, and it's kind of shaped your career up to now too, because you say things how it is, right? Like you're very real.
I mean, to some degree. I mean, I guess. I mean, one of the things that I write pretty much exactly the way I talk, which I think that's sort of like, you know, a lot of recipes in the world, a lot of, you know, but I think that, I mean, it's the writing style, you know, is what makes every person uniquely who they are, you know, as much, if not more, I think, as the recipes and the food you cook. I mean, certainly certain people could be just really well known because they are the foremost expert on Szechuan cooking, right? Mm-hmm. But I would not be the foremost expert on anything, frankly. But I talk and I write in a way that's very conversational and very, you know, super chatty and lots of run-on sentences and really too little or too much punctuation, depending on, you know, my mood.
But it's you. It's you. And that's what...
That's a fact.
Yeah. It must be rewarding that people, you know, at this point, you know, people really enjoy that.
It's really, really nice when you get, like, that's the thing that means the most to me. Like any award, whatever, like all lovely, right? Recognition from sort of higher up powers or whatever is lovely, but nothing is better than a single email from a person I don't know saying, oh my God, like I made your bolognese sauce last night. And my mother-in-law was like, holy crap, like that's the best bolognese sauce I've had. Like that is the favorite thing. And then the nicest compliment I ever got was somewhat recently where somebody said to me, can you fix the printer, the way your recipes print out from your blog? Because when I print your recipes, the head note, which is the recipe intro, which is where you get all chatty, the head note doesn't print out with the recipe. And that's to me, the most important part. And that was like the single best thing anyone's ever said to me ever.
That's awesome. Cause that's you. It's your personality.
Yeah.
It
was awfully nice.
Well, I'm sure you're shaping a lot of kitchens everywhere with your work.
You know.
I think you are. I know you are.
I would hope so. I mean, I don't know.
You are. What's it like?
like you are.
You
pay
are.
Attention.
Take my compliment. what is it like, you know, as a mom, and especially because your cookbook that you wrote, it helps moms everywhere. What's that like? You make such a difference for moms like who are in a pinch and probably need something, and then here's your book, and it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for that. You know, thanks, Katie.
Well, I mean, that's the hope. That is the goal.
What is that like knowing you're helping moms out there?
It's really nice. I mean, again, if I hear from somebody, when I hear from people who tell me that you know, they never had the confidence to make a homemade cake before, but, you know, or they were having like a really hard time finding recipes that their whole family liked, or, you know, something along those lines, right? That they never, their kid has never once been, they've never gotten their kid to eat fish, and, you know, and they tried X recipe, one of my recipes. And again, that's just like, that is as good as it gets for me.
Do you have any advice? This may be personal to me, but we have a little baby who's starting to eat everything now. Do you have any advice for like parents, new parents of, because you're such an expert. I'm just curious. Like,
that's a nice way of saying old. You're saying old, right?
No, I'm saying you're an expert. You're an expert. Is there any advice on making sure, like, because allergies or not, like kids get very picky. So is there any tips on what you cook your children? Like, is there any rhyme or reason to it? Or just like give them everything? Or what do you think?
So a couple of things. One, a lot of my recipes in my books have something called the fork in the road element, which is a way of making something up to a certain point, and then you can leave some of it on the plainer and simpler side, and you can keep going with the rest of the recipe and make it more like full-bodied or, you know, spicy or whatever it is that, you know, the adults or the more adventurous eaters in the house like. So that's like, you know, if you had, you know, you could just make a breaded, you know, a panko coated chicken breast and saute it up and leave one of them super plain for your kid, and then make a beautiful sauce and drizzle it over the other ones, you know, turn it into chicken, you know, piccata for mm-hmm. you and your wife if you wanted to. But the other thing, which not enough people know, is that weirdly, and I'm not a scientist or, you know, an expert in the nutritional or science areas of any of this, but when you are born, when a child is born, they have something like 10,000 taste buds on their tongue. And I may have totally misremembered the number, but the point of this being is that you have many fewer as an adult. So they're highly sensitized to flavors. So what would taste a little bitter to you is overpoweringly bitter to a little person. Mm-hmm. And nutritionists say the number varies, but 7 to 10 seems to be like where most people land, that you have to expose a child to a new food 7 to 10 times before they'll embrace it.
Wow.
So
that makes sense.
Just means keep going, right? Like, you put the broccoli down, encourage the at least take one bite thing. And if that's all they're going to take and they turn up their nose, you know, you don't say eat more, and you don't say, well, I'm never serving broccoli
again.
A week later, the broccoli goes on, and you're going to try roasting it because that caramelizes it and makes it a little bit sweeter than just plain steamed broccoli, which doesn't taste that great, frankly, you know, unless it's like covered with some beautiful teriyaki sauce.
You ever see those videos of babies eating lemons? Now it makes sense. They make like the biggest, most extreme faces because they're like,
that's like, you know, it's like almost like if you pictured, it's funny, that just brings analogies. Like, if you had a jalapeno and like took a bite of a jalapeno, that would be like a baby taking a bite of like a ghost pepper.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So
like, that's like, but so that's part of it.
Wow.
But you have to keep going, which brings me to, which is actually interesting because that is also, so I'm involved in a bunch of hunger relief organizations. And one of the big things, of course, if you're on a very limited budget, you know, working parent, maybe working more than one job, don't have, you're running out of money. And this, try broccoli a few times, you might not have a great supermarket near you. Their broccoli might be really old.
Mm-hmm.
You might not know how to cook broccoli. And you also are going to spend your hard-earned dollars on this broccoli, and your kid's not going to like it. So at the end of the day, you're tired, you're exhausted. You put down a meal your kid's not going to eat. And now I'm telling you to do that again for the next 7 weeks.
Yeah.
All these pieces of advice are, you know, kind of, this is in the lens of the privileged, pretty
much. Right,
right. Where there's enough money for food and you can make these decisions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you do a lot of work in the, you know, promoting family meals and doing things that help those who need food. Tell me a little bit about what that means to you, because you do a lot in that space, right?
Yeah. I'm on the board of City Harvest, which is a food rescue organization. I'm sure you
it's
know
it's in New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'm on the Food Council of No Kid Hungry, which is Share a Strength. And I've been involved in a bunch of other organizations as well. But it's just, I think this is, and it's not, it is not uncommon in the food industry for people to be involved in hunger relief to you know, varying degrees, because those of us who feed people for a living and take great pleasure in feeding our family and our friends and our, you know, customers or clients, And the thought of people going without, you know, is just extremely unsettling and painful and unacceptable. So.
Yeah, well, that's awesome you do that. And also, like you said, like the not having the means and, you know, having not having Whole Foods and stuff, like we probably take a lot for granted in what we get to have in our meals.
Yep.
Really good to talk with you. You've inspired me to cook more. And to cook better in my home.
I know where you can get 2 cookbooks.
I'm sold. Thank you so much. It's been great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Created, a Blueprint podcast. Check out even more in-depth interviews with your favorite creators at myblueprint.com.